Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Are You the One Wrap-Up Podcast for episode 4 of season 2. I am Brian Cohen. I'm here with my co-host, Allie Lesher. Allie, how are we doing tonight?
I'm doing great, but I am, to be honest with you, a little bit concerned that this podcast is going to be 300 hours because so much happened last night on this episode.
Yeah, I mean, this was just a really just full, just entertaining hour of television. You know, sometimes we watch MTV just for, like, the stupid drunken fights, but from start to finish, this had everything. I was really into this one.
I'm trying to decide what I want out of Are You the One, because I feel like last season it was kind of like a sleeper. I was watching it at my own pace. I felt kind of on top of everything. This season, I am behind. And I like it. I mean, it's nonstop, action-packed drama, wall-to-wall drama, but I'm confused.
Well, you're not the only one confused, because basically everything we watched the first 4 weeks outside of any Paris and Pratt stuff basically means nothing at this point. So it's basically like we're going to hit a pilot. Episode 5 will be episode 1 all over again.
One thing before we jump in, I have a correction from last week. I misreported that in the moment between Shelby, Nate, and Dario, where Dario kind of comes to Shelby's rescue and Shelby's like talking to another girl and says, he's so attracted to me. Like, he saved her because he's so attracted to her. She tweeted at us, helpfully, thank you, at MTV Shelves. I appreciate the love. To clarify, I said he's attractive to me, not attracted to me. And also, it was hat night. So she clarifies two very important points there. One, they were doing hat day, which is why Brian noticed all those hats. And two, she's not crazy and said that he's attractive to her, not attracted.
Definitely the more important part of that story for me was that it was hat night. So
we're getting a lot of clarity. Even this episode, we're getting a lot of clarity on things you brought up last week.
Yeah, and I need to offer my own, not clarification, but maybe apology to the fact that I kind of sounded like Darth Vader at the end of the last podcast, and it may freak some people out, but that will not happen this week. I almost guarantee it. Hopefully. We'll see.
I'll believe it when I hear it.
So you ready to jump into this one? Because like I said, we have a lot to talk about.
Let's do it.
All right. So we start off with, once again, the Bree reaction from the Magic Stars. But this time she was not alone. She had Curtis with her and the lovely couple of Anthony and Jenny discussing that they have 3 matches, but not really that good of a situation to be in.
Did you notice that in this, like, they're doing like a 4-person confessional, a couple's confessional, if you will. Mm-hmm. Anthony and Jenny have like weird body language where Jenny's like arm is like slung around. I just made up a word. Like, it's like around him.
Slung around, I like that.
And his arms are just like crossed and Anthony-like. I don't know. I just feel like she's trying to change herself, like make this a positive situation. And he's like giving her just enough.
I mean, the whole Jenny-Anthony situation, every time they've been on camera, it just feels just not, I don't know if it's like awkward, but it's just like, it just feels weird, and I'm just happy that hopefully now that'll be done with. It just didn't seem right for each other like at all.
I just think like from what we're seeing of Anthony, like this frat boy, whatever, sleeps with Jess, leaves, like, you know, whatever. The picture that we're being painted of him, where he's like, you know, running the same lines on all of these girls. And the picture that's being painted of Jenny is totally different. And I almost like want better for her. That's not to say that he's not great to her and we're just seeing a certain edited version of him. But from what I can see, it's like, stop believing him. He's awful.
Yeah, I mean, there was a confessional later on where he like freaks out saying, even if we're not a match, we can still be together. And you could just tell like he thought of that line before that confessional. Was like, ooh, this will be a really good thing to say to her to make her really like me. And it just seems like everything he does is like just calculated to get whoever he's targeting to be with him. That's kind of just what I get the sense from him.
Well, then, I mean, we can just like talk about the two of them quickly, a little out of order. They're in the pool and Jenny's like, oh my God, your eyes. Like, I think his eyes are a little crazy, but whatever. I mean, if I was into him, sure, his eyes. So she's saying, oh my God, your eyes. Like, do you just look at a girl and tell her she's cute or tell her she's pretty? And like, that's it. And he's like, no. We've literally seen him do that. Like, look at a girl with those eyes, say something nice about how pretty she is, and then sleep with her. Like, we've seen that happen to Jess. And I hope, you know, Jenny's hopefully not with him now after the not a match situation. But, you know, she's I wonder what she's thinking watching this back after literally watching him run the same game on Jess.
Yeah, and it kind of leads to the next part, because I kind of think with Ellie being into Anthony, I kind of think that's almost a much better situation for Anthony, because Ellie won't deal with like that type of stuff. Ellie just seems like the type of person that just says immediately what's on her mind. It doesn't care that, oh, his eyes are beautiful, I'm going to fall for that. But like, she just has a much firmer grasp, I think, of what she wants in someone. And I think if she likes Anthony, then that has a much better chance of being a match than Jenny or Jess.
I think we did talk about Ellie and Anthony as like a fleeting possibility in a past show. Mm-hmm. And good on us, because, yeah, I think also even what she's saying about him, like he's playful, is more than, I mean, Jenny and Anthony came out of making Leighton jealous. And then I'm sure she actually legitimately liked him. I mean, she picked him over Leighton many times just in general. But it stemmed out of, oh, Leighton's messing around with Jess, so I'm going to pay attention to Anthony. Whereas Ellie's like, I've gotten to know him. He's playful. He's pulling my pants down. Like, I like him. I don't know that Anthony is going to reciprocate that with Ellie, but I do think that there could more likely be a match.
Yeah, I kind of get the sense that like Jess and Jenny are the type of girls that Anthony wants to end up with, but maybe Ellie's probably the person that he should end up with, and maybe that's going to end up being who his match is going to be.
Well, what another thing that I think Ellie and Anthony make them a good match is that Ellie is not scared off by other girls that he's slept with. Like, Ellie's not going to react, oh, you slept with Jess, whatever. Ellie literally sees scars down his back, cites the scars down his back from other girls as a reason that she's attracted to him.
Ellie's unbelievable. She, you know, I talked her up a lot in the preseason, but in all honesty, I think she's like surpassed my expectations of like the type of, she's just hysterical. Just everything out of her mouth is just funny.
Can't get enough of Ellie. I'm so glad that there's no sign of her going to the honeymoon suite anytime soon, and I hope I didn't just jinx it.
I think she's here for the long haul. Yeah. And then we have two couples, or a love triangle that is now basically no more, with Christina, John, and Brandon. We start off with Christina and John, and Christina is talking about how, you know, she wants to go in the truth booth immediately with him because she wants to find out, but doesn't want to risk because she just did that with Brandon. And Christina's not looking the best in this situation, I don't think.
I still think she's Teflon. Like, I don't really know how she's going in between. I think because she's just being honest. Like, she's keeping it real about Brandon. She's saying she's trying. I really do think she is trying.
So do I.
But she hasn't reciprocated anything for John. She hasn't gone any further physically with John. I think that she's getting to know John, like she's getting to know Alex, like she's getting to know Brianna. Like, I just think she's a friendly girl, and John's like, I'm into you. And she's like, yeah, I could be into you, but I'm into this guy right now, and you know that. And I'm trying, but everybody's open about it, so it's fine. Like, she's Teflon, and I respect the hustle.
Yeah, and it may not even be her fault, but it seems that John thinks that she was more into him than it seemed. And I mean, if that's just John's perception of it, then that's not really Christina's fault. But that's kind of just the way, at least it's been edited, that John thinks that Christina's really into him, but maybe she's not.
Well, John, I think I tweeted about this. I don't even know. John is saying all this stuff. I can't be with you. Like, you're with Brandon all the time. We'll get later to it, but like, John's not the Virgin Mary waiting for her. So I just don't know. You're in this environment where people are allowed to hook up with multiple people and encouraged in order to win money. They're rewarded for it. Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of think he needs to put his big boy panties on and assert himself a little bit more and not just whine and wait for the girl, you know, and blame her.
Yeah, well, at least he's not smelling Christina's pillows and stuff like that. So I'll give John kudos for that, because that was, Brandon, you know I love you, but dude, smelling her pillows and that's kind of creepy, right?
Well, all right. So Alex Panda, no relation to Shanda the Panda. I'm not sure. Alex Panda Miran. I'm sorry, I'm butchering everyone's name. I can barely read. Asked on Facebook, is it just me or was it weird that it seemed Christina thought it was sweet when Brandon said he smells a pillow that smells like her? Is Brandon reaching stage five clinger mode?
It's getting a little close, right? Or just, I don't know. That was just, it didn't seem like that would be something that would come out of like Brandon's mouth, but
Here's what I think about it. And I think, Brandon, you've painted this like huge masculine poker playing image of Brandon that you want to hang out with.
Don't forget the cancer solving skills.
But the picture we've seen of him on TV has been a mushy, teary, in love dude. And I'm not saying those two things can't coexist, but you have this image of him that doesn't necessarily match what we've seen of him. But what I think about this whole pillow thing, and if it's creepy or not, this is a perfect case study here between Shelby and Nate and Brandon and Christina. When you like the guy, it doesn't matter as much what he's doing. If someone's doing something equally as creepy, not saying Nathan's actions and Brandon's are equally as creepy, but if a guy is doing something creepy and you're into him, it's sweet. If a guy is doing something creepy and you're not, it's stage five clinger. So I think we're seeing Christina likes Brandon, may love Brandon, and he's like, I missed you, so my pillow smelled like you. And she's like, oh, really? And Nathan's like, I want to be with you. And Shelby's like, maybe you should see other people. It's all about how the girl feels, and that frames the creepiness.
That's a very fair point. I mean, that was definitely creepier than a lot of the stuff that Nate did, and Nate obviously came across a lot worse. That's a very fair point. I'll give you that.
Yeah, and the thing is the difference between Brandon running his game and Anthony running his game is I kind of believe it when Brandon does it. Like, I believe that Brandon smells that pillow.
Oh, no, I fully believe it. I don't think he was lying at all. No, he definitely was, like, lying in his bed, smelling the pillow, imagining, oh, Christina, I wish you were here right now.
So, speaking of love and romance, that brings us to Leighton and Jess.
So, you remember that time when Jess said she was going to, like, take things slow and not, like, sleep with someone just because she likes him? I like how that lasted about a week.
Well, I think she offered it to Leighton way earlier, and then Leighton just finally took her up on it. But what's troubling to me is the difference in their perceptions. Again, this could be editing, but we're going off of what we see. And Jess is so into him. I don't know if they edited this and she was talking about her man in general or if she was talking about Leighton as her man. And she says, you know, voiced over while they're in the boom, boom room, my man is my life and I'm here to give him anything he needs. Is that about Leighton specifically or is that about her man in general?
I think it's probably just about her man, like, in general. That was probably just a general. That might not even be even been asked, like, that day or even the next day. That was probably just a general question. And then this was just a good time to mention it. Although Leighton did bring that up again later on, that whatever guy Jess is into, like, she just, like, devouts herself to them. So that could just be, like, one of just her things that she says, like, in general. But I think just that was not specifically towards Leighton.
I just feel bad for Jess in this situation because, and he's not wronging her. He's not necessarily leading her on. I mean, he's very sexually attracted to her. We see that. And that's what he expresses to her. But he says all of these things in, like, abstract terms, like, if you're going to be with a country boy, you got to country up. Or if you're going to be with me, like, you have to do this. Like, you, and it's just like, she doesn't have to do anything. Like, if you like her, you like her. Like, I think Leighton is trying to, like, convince himself that he likes her when he, or there's something more there than just sexual attraction. And Jess has all these feelings for him. Mm-hmm. And it's not matched up. Like, Leighton basically says when they go to the boom boom room, just to the camera, like, maybe I need a release and Jess can be the release.
Yeah, that was also very not like Nathan. And that's not even Nathan. Not like Leighton of him to say, because you found that, like, he just seems like a kind of, like, a respectable guy that he, like, treats his women, like, right. And that was just kind of weird that he was like, oh, I just needed to, like, let off some steam and Jess was right there for me to do it. That was kind of weird.
Yeah, I definitely think she's under the impression, and he maybe gives her the impression that he's really, there's something that could be more there when he's known the whole time that there isn't anything else there, you know.
Yeah. No, and it also kind of makes me think that maybe he just has always just been into Jenny, and since she's kind of been pushing away and he's kind of just been talking to Jess, that he's just by default staying with Jess, maybe.
I'm totally skipping ahead, but when the part where Leighton confronts Jenny, like, why haven't you talked to me? Jess is right there in the room and she interjects in support of Leighton and that Jenny should be talking to her. And, like, we can get more into this later, but I mean, maybe Leighton has made it clear to her that she just views Jess as a friend, but maybe. Jess is in the room when you're going after the girl that you really like. I thought that was kind of...
It just on that scene, they were like, it seemed like they were talking by themselves, and all of a sudden there were like three or four people surrounding them. So I guess, I think they thought they were alone at first, and then all of a sudden more people popped up. But yeah, that, we can get to that a little bit later on. Because then we actually had our first Garland sighting of the season. So we finally got the tough guy.
Anchovies. He ate anchovies. We've seen him before.
He had his first moments in the house of note with him and Jasmine clicking, kind of. Sort of, even though, like, he said, like, I've always been into you, so I have to make the first move, and, I mean, I don't know why he waited so long to make the first move. It's been, like, a week and a half, but at least he's doing something.
This conversation was really interesting to me, and I have another correction here. Well, first of all, I have to say that Jasmine's Tiffany necklace that she literally wears in every single shot is like the new men's microphone for me. Like, it's just always there. Like, it's like bathing suit there, like date there, talking to Garland there. Like, she always wears it. So maybe it's like a special thing to her, but it's very distracting to me. Side note. So they have a very troubling conversation to me. Maybe troubling is not the right word, but when do I ever use the right word? Jasmine's been single for 4 years because she sucks at relationships. She tells him that she has a bad history of just being friends with benefits with guys. And then he asks, how many people has she been intimate with? I don't know how you're going to choose to interpret this, but to me, that's, especially in the context of the episode, how many people have you had sex with?
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Okay. I could get tweets saying intimate is a lot of things, but okay. She says 7. He goes like, wow, that's it. That's such a small number. And she doesn't say like, yeah, I'm 22. 7 is my choice. Like, that's whatever. She starts saying like, well, I know, but it's low because these were a lot of like long-term friends with benefits things. Like, she makes an excuse for having her number the way it is. And I got a text message from somebody who watches the show who's like, wait, does a 22-year-old have to defend having 7 sexual partners as like a low number or a high number or whatever? Like, she shouldn't need to defend herself to Garland. And I just wanted to jump through the screen and be like, whatever it is, it's fine.
Well, when you think about the fact that Garland said that he slept with 100, hearing someone say 7 is definitely a drop off, but I totally agree with you. That the whole topic of numbers was a whole another fiasco of just very questionable moments.
My one correction, though, is I tweeted something just like, I'm not a mathematician, but like, she's 22 years old. She's had 7 partners in long term friends with benefit situations. Like, how long term could that be? Like, that to me knocks down your, I don't know. So she tweeted back at me very helpfully also, Jasmine at J-A-S-I-P-E-N, Jazzy Pen. They overlapped each other. We LOL. Friends with benefits aren't monogamous. And I was ready to come to this podcast with just like, well, that contradicts your whole thing. If they were monogamous, then how did you have time for long term? If they weren't monogamous, then why is it an excuse that it's only 7? It could be 1,000 if it wasn't monogamous. And I brought this up to someone at work.
And taking the show to work. Maybe this is our jobs.
And an attorney that I work with told me, maybe from experience or maybe not. I won't name any names. I don't know his life. But when you're having sex with 3 people and friends with benefits, long, non-monogamous things, it's hard to find time to bring in a 4th. So that settles it. I apologize to Jasmine for calling out her math. That makes sense to me. I guess it's maintaining a few non-monogamous friends with benefits situations yields less partners than just a new person every night like Garland was experiencing.
I'm just impressed the amount of times you brought the word monogamous into a conversation.
So I'm surprised I haven't said monogamous.
I'm also impressed that you didn't mispronounce it like I thought I was going to try to do on my first time.
So, yeah, so that's one less rant you'll get from me.
All right, challenge. We'll get to the challenge. This actually looked like probably the most fun of any of the challenges that they've done. A giant,
you want to play
slide.
The slip it in challenge? That's
I'll gladly go down a slip and slide all day. Slip and slide.
How do you
are
feel
awesome.
About how do you feel about the challenge puns? Like, we had break the ice, now we have slip it in.
I mean, it's the same people who come up with the bios on the MTV pages. The MTV interns at work
are the interns naming the episodes and the challenges.
I think the do you think like Ryan's actually named it up? Like, I love that he says that I'm calling. But he's not calling it. I'll definitely take a firm stance on that. He's definitely not the one calling it.
Maybe he went rogue and just came up with that on the spot. Improv.
He could have. But, I mean, I don't know. Slip and slides look awesome, so.
So basically, this is, we have a girls' challenge finally. So maybe we can stop complaining about that. It's always in the guys' control. And the girls have to slide through. I mean, that was totally unnecessary. I guess it was just to drain them, but they have to slip and slide down, get a block with a guy's face on it, and put it into this. What were they calling this? The kill?
I don't know what they called it anything.
Okay. So they have to put it into a box next to a number. And the numbers range from 9 to too many to count. And it's, we find out that it's the self-reported, emphasis on self-reported,
very self-reported. Number
of girls that these guys claim, emphasis on claim, to have slept with. And so they have to guess. And one thing I thought was really cool about this was that oftentimes, like, they do these challenges on season one and even starting into season two where they have to attribute certain things to the other cast members, whether it's a quote we saw, it's this number or whatever else. And somehow they know this stuff somehow. And I'm just like, how do they know this about each other? How does this come up? And Christina finally in a confessional was like, we didn't talk about this, so we're guessing.
Well, I mean, based on the results, it was pretty clear that we're just guessing. No one got more than two. So it seemed like no one really had much of an idea.
But so we have, number with coming in at the lowest, number 9, Layton. Pratt was at 12. Curtis was at 18. Dario was at 20. And this was my favorite part, is when Dario sees that somebody has 100, he's like, people have to be lying. Because if you're sleeping with 100 women, you have to be getting tested. That's wild. And like, were you surprised? I was surprised to hear Dario say that. I judged him, I guess.
I mean, I think he was like one of the few people who was actually honest, because I think 20 probably is exactly his number. So. Kudos for him for just being honest, because there's no way Garland is 100, but it's way more than 100.
My favorite. Well, good. So Alex was at 45, which, okay, this is my, when they're talking about, like, the men are seeing the boards for the first time and they don't know each other's numbers. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh my God, who's 9? And Alex goes, you're a bitch if you're 9. And it's like, okay, well, you're probably really 9 and you wrote 45. Because anyone who's going to call Leighton a bitch for having slept with 9, now 10 people, is definitely a little self-conscious.
My guess is everyone above Dario lied about the number by at least 5 times. That's my prediction.
So we'll keep going. So Moosty's coming in at 50, Brandon at 60, Anthony at 65, Garland at 100, and Nathan is at too many to count. And I'll let you touch that because I can't. But one thing is, like, I want to say that this was, I want to know how this number was taken. Like, was this written down at casting? Like, was this written down just like a random survey that they didn't realize would be used in a game in this fashion? And so they just round up, 65. Yeah, that sounds right.
That was my question too. I feel like they had to have like just done this, because if you filled this out, let's say 2 or 3 months ago, and you blatantly lied, which obviously we're assuming some of these people did, would you remember what your lied number was? Like, would you remember, like Brandon and Anthony, would you remember if you lied and said 60 or 65? I feel like they must have just done this like pretty recently.
Well, they definitely didn't do it while they were on the show, because I mean, Layton didn't count Jess, but, and I'm,
I was curious, like, what if you, like, forgot what number you said?
I mean, I think it's more likely that they were prepped with what their number was,
what
they
said,
than surveyed on the spot, because I think you're going to get a better number if people are unsuspecting of, like, I think it's better that some people said 100 for the show's purposes, and you might get a better result than if they're thinking, oh, my mom's going to see this, let me be honest, and put 0.
Yeah. And just in regards to Nate, I found it a lot more believable that he actually can't count past 10 than he slept with anywhere near the numbers that he claims to have slept with.
I mean, that was just sad. Everything Nathan does now is sad.
Everything he does.
I have to say, I had to unfollow him on Twitter. I'm following all the guests and monitor. And I had to unfollow him because he just constantly, every 15 minutes, tweets these, like, song lyrics. And they're not original lyrics. They're lyrics from songs that I know. And I'm just like, I can't read this mushy crap or this hip-hop crap that he's, like, trying to attribute to his life. So I had to unfollow him. And he, actually, funnily enough,
We're making up words here. I still can't proud to pronounce uncharacteristically. Hey, I got it.
We're doing our best. So he tweeted, like, I'm worried about my mom seeing this one tonight or something like that. And I was like, ooh, nice. Like, is he going to go to the boom boom with someone new? Like, yes, this can be interesting. Redemption of Nate. And I click it and it's just a picture of hit two pictures of him and one picture of Ari the One and like other guys behind him. It's clearly screenshots from the challenge. But I was like, this isn't, what did he do with these guys that his mom's not going to be happy about? And now it's that he's had sex with too many to count women, too many women to count. But that to me was like false advertising. That was boring too. I'm over it.
You're over it, Nate. That's why you unfollowed him.
I unfollowed him. I know it's tragic. He's devastated. I'm sure I'm a huge loss.
So just a couple of notes. Yeah, I'm sure he's devastated. A couple of notes that I had on the challenge. Ellie was once again the star of this. When she basically just gave up running and just started walking and everyone was yelling at her that she needs her cigarette break. It was just so perfect. As much as I would like hate to see it because she would absolutely, she might die. I want to see her on the challenge and attempt the final, because if she was like with Johnny Bananas and was like doing stuff like this, it would be just unbelievable television.
Well, there's also Paris who just would slide down and then just lay on the floor. Like, they definitely did not show any athletic ability of the girls. I'm sure there were girls who were acting very athletic, but they focused on just being lazy bones, trying to move up the mountain or lay on the ground, being exhausted.
Yeah, you know, outside of like a couple of guys and maybe a couple of the women, this is a very weak challenge draft class, which I'm sure a lot of people don't care about, but I very much care about that. And it's not, sorry, season two guys, you're not, I don't think you're going to be winning challenge titles anytime soon.
Well, I mean, we'll, I'm sure towards the end of the season, we'll start talking about people that we think could be on the challenge. But I definitely think that there's, I think that there's enough of a pool of athletic challenge people right now, and that they need more people who are going to be irresponsible and not care about sleeping and resting up for challenges and working out, and who are going to drink and make out and be stupid. So I definitely think that there's a lot of material in this cast to, with there are a lot of people in the cast with potential to be great challenge TV in conjunction with the pool of athletes we already have.
The pool of drunken people who make stupid decisions that don't care about athletic ability is basically the tagline of season two of Ari the One. So, so if you're looking for the winners of this challenge, you have Jessica, Paris, and Jasmine. Jessica obviously took Layton, Paris, I was Pratt, and Jasmine took Mr. 100 and Garland.
At this point,
I was just saying, no real surprises there, I don't think.
You know, surprises, and I was also super pumped at this set of three, because even if they cheesed out and put Jasmine and Garland in, there was still reason for us to believe that they could be a match.
Yeah, I mean, I never doubted for a second that once Paris and Pratt won, that anyone but them would have done it. I don't even think anyone voted for anyone but them.
Right, right.
But I would like to see, like, the voting tabulations.
So that's, I'm not sure you can get that.
The way they do the voting is kind of weird. I don't. I feel like it should be an open forum rather than like some people go by themselves, some people go with someone. So it's not like definite secretive, but it's not fully secret. I don't know. It's just a weird way they did the voting. But
I just think the voting is so much less significant in this than it is in the challenge, where it's like a huge scene in the challenge. Here, it's just like you see a few people walk up and press the screen and that's it.
That's true, that's true. And then we have the mega event of the episode with the lingerie party.
So many great one-liners in this episode, starting with Curtis saying, the girls are clothingless.
The lingerie party was, I think it was the best, like, 12-minute segment of Ari the One history. It was unbelievable.
I thought you were going to say it was the best 12-minute segment of your life.
No, not quite. I'm not getting that high. But it was very good. It was very good.
No, it was good. And some of the girls were being, you know, less, less clothingless, but Paris is just like busting in her bra and her, like, her thong. I mean, I don't think it started as a thong, but as she ran around drunk the house, her whole ass was out. So good on her.
I mean, it's almost like Paris, after she won that challenge, knew she was going to the Truth Booth and had very good sense that she was going to be knocked out, and was like, I need to make one last final stance on my 15 minutes of fame, and I'm going to go absolutely apeshit in this moment, because that is exactly what she did. And it was fantastic.
Yeah, was it fantastic?
Oh, let's get into it. Fantastic.
Okay, so many cringeworthy moments. Number one, John's interaction with Paris pre-makeout. Does that come through over Skype? Like, okay, Paris is blacked out, and I'm going to just assume that John was drunk for his own benefit, and this is where he later does push her away, and he does do the right thing and all these things that he said he did. But when Paris is coming on to him and saying, like, do you think you can handle all of this? Do you think you can handle me? And he's saying, yeah, you're a bad girl. Bite that chain. Like, you are not pushing her off. You are not sending her away. And don't paint this heroic picture again of yourself. Because I can't take it.
He really goes back and forth with the oh, I'm going to be the good guy, but I'm not going to be the good guy. But here, I'm going to be a good guy. I'm not going to be a good guy here. It's like he has a multiple personality thing.
I think that he totally goes for it. Then when it's actually happening, he panics and says no. And then when she's like, nope, you're not saying no, he's like, okay.
Well, there is a difference between just fun flirting with her and then actually hooking up with her, especially when apparently, I don't think we ever saw this, but apparently John and Pratt are friends. And actually following through with that is like a little different than just like us playfully flirting with her.
I think he's an instigator. I don't think that was playful. I think Anthony and Ellie are being playful. I think you're half naked and she's grinding on you and saying, could you handle this? And he's saying, yeah, bite that chain. I don't know. Maybe where I'm from, that's intention. That's intent right there.
I guess so.
The verdict is in. Guilty.
So then it stops being playful because then eventually, as John says, he folds and they do make out. And of course, Ellie is there. Ellie is always there. With that, whenever there's a big moment, she's just always there. And Paris, no! Oh, Ellie.
Well, one thing that I loved is, well, I'm jumping ahead, but one real quick thing about Ellie is Ellie actually got a little something-something at this party by requesting / demanding that Anthony make out with her.
It was a request. It was a straight demand.
He kisses her. She's like, that was lame. And then that's it. So just wanted to give Ellie a shout out there on getting some action. But no, so she's right. So she's there in the thick of it with
always,
John and Paris.
Always in the thick of it.
And she's like, oh, Paris. And that's it. Like, she's like enjoying watching it.
And, I mean, obviously, John can't, but again, she's right in the middle of it when John and Pratt go in. So she's always just like, if you think if you go back to the last few episodes, in any big moment, Ellie's just always there. And it's,
oh,
it's
yeah.
Great.
It's the great. Best. Is that when she's getting into it between Paris and John, is she's like, he said that was enough. Like, that's a good defense. Like, that he hooked up with her and then said, thank you, that's enough. I've had enough now. We're done.
If I ever kill someone and I needed a lawyer, I'm hiring Ellie. I just feel like, first of all, she would be there, so she'd be able to be my witness. And then just whatever she said, like every judge and jury would be like, oh, I fully believe Ellie. Of course, innocent. Boom.
No, but she'd be like, he hit the car, but that was enough. Then he said, that's enough, and he left. Like, oh, okay, like, then we forgive you for hitting the car because you left and you said that was enough. Like, just, how's my Ellie impression, by the way? I'm trying so hard.
It's better than mine, that's for
it's
sure.
Not great.
Impressions is not the strokes, so they are you want to wrap up.
Okay, so let's immediately, Paris hooks up with John, and he does say, that's enough. And then, I'm so bad at that. He does say it's enough, and she keeps, like, viciously mauling at him. And then he's like, shh, don't tell, Pratt's gonna kill me, and, like, runs out and transforms into this, you're gonna hate me, you're gonna hate me.
It's just so funny, like, she's in, like, very little clothing, and just, like, bawling and crying, and Pratt's, like, of course, oh, we have to get into this, of course, holding his pitcher. Because shout out to MTV for actually answering this question that you heard it here first last week when I brought it up, that Pratt always has a pitcher, and MTV actually did a whole segment on it. So good job by them. But it was just a very just funny situation of seeing Paris basically in no clothes, like begging for mercy with Pratt. It was very,
yeah, she was clothingless.
She was clothingless.
But she does this whole, and you can see here that with Paris, this is kind of rehearsed, not in a disingenuous way, but just, she's been through this before. Like, you're going to be so mad at me. Please don't be mad at me. I did something bad. I kissed someone. Who was it? I don't want to tell you. It didn't mean anything. Okay, it was John. Like, the way that she tells the story just, like, unfolds in this. We've seen it a million times on Real World. We've just seen it a million times, and she nailed it.
She's definitely done this speech many times over. But the kudos to Pratt for not, like, caving immediately and just being, oh, it's okay, it's fine. Like, he was genuinely upset and stuck to it. And then his conversation with John just filled with great one-liners. I mean, if Pratt could be the cheated on drunk version of himself all the time, he'd be my favorite person in the house.
Yeah, this was, I think Pratt won me over slightly here just in time for him to leave. So I did like, he's like, if I'm in the wrong, he just launches into this sarcastic, like, that's fun. If I'm in the wrong here, please let me know. Like this overly dramatic, but he doesn't pop off. It's just kind of goofy, drunk anger.
Well, he's drinking his Pratt juice out of his pitcher. So he's in that good mindset.
I'm sorry. Pratt juice was taken. That's so like 2005.
2005. Wow, that's 9 years ago.
I don't know. Really, when did the Jersey Shore debut? Ron Ron Juice. It was definitely 2010.
Yeah, 2008-09.
Listen, math isn't my strong suit. I already said that, yeah, but been done.
Maybe you're Nate's perfect match then.
Sure. Okay. This show mostly doesn't work anyway.
So with John and Pratt, everyone's trying to calm down Pratt, and Pratt goes, I am so fucking calm right now, in a very not calm way, which is always a fantastic version of someone's drunk self when they're saying, I'm not doing something while at the same time reaffirming the point that they're doing it. Always a winner. And Pratt then explains, I'm fully back on the market.
I think what's great about this little scene is like we see so many people crumble and just resort to just total self-awareness. Paris is like immediately goes to like, I'm terrified of commitment issues. Like I'm a horrible person. John immediately goes to like, I'll never find my match because I take any girl that like approaches me, like any girl I can get, I'll take. So I'm a horrible person too. Like everyone just goes immediately down and cuts to the bone on themselves in order to offer themselves to Pratt. And it works. It largely works. It seems like everyone came out fine.
Yeah, and I think Brie brought this up a little bit later on when she said, like, this show is not really about finding your match, but finding out about yourself. It's a very deep comment by her. But it seemed to be true in this very moment with both Paris and John, just basically explaining the reason why they're on this show to begin with.
So we move to the date with Pratt, where we're at mentally and emotionally between Pratt and Paris is Pratt is like, we're definitely not a match.
Before we get to the date, there are a couple other one-liners that I have to give.
Please go ahead. I'm sorry.
First of all, did you hear his comment about if we leave the house, that all of a sudden she's going to be making out with like the bellboy? That was
I missed that.
Oh, you gotta hear that one. That's
I was in that, a tizzy.
And then when he's like bawling into the confessional, all of a sudden he's like, oh, my hair's all messed up. Oh my god, that was great.
No, I did get that. I skipped that. I'm sorry. Yeah, no, totally. I mean, he had like emo hair for his emo moment, and I appreciated that. It was authentic.
I just love this like self-awareness of that exact moment looking into the camera bank. Oh, I know this is gonna be shown and my hair looks like crap.
He was raw.
He definitely like asked the producer, was like, wait, can I just fix my hair and go back and do that scene? I'll cry even harder this time, I promise.
So any other moments? So then right before the date, Paris is in the headspace where she's talking to Nate, which is hilarious because Nate's trying to like get on this who has it worse situation. And he's like, oh, I'm so hungover. I know how you feel. And she's like, well, you didn't just screw up someone you were falling in love with. And he's like, fair. But like Nate always has to like have the worst emotional experience. And unfortunately for him, unfortunately for the viewers, this wasn't about him this week. But Paris is explaining, I have nothing, and when I have something, I push it away, but I've never felt this bad before. So she keeps coming back to this point where, like, I've cheated all the time, and I didn't care, and I know this is important because I feel bad now that I cheated.
Which is, like, in the moment, like, if you're a Pratt, you hear that, like, oh, that's actually kind of sweet. But, like, if you dig deeper into that comment, doesn't that just mean, like, she's kind of, like, a bad person?
Well, so we have a question from Anna Jose with a follow-up question from Kevin Matthews from Facebook. Anna Jose says, that was such a great episode. This might be a loaded question, but do you guys honestly think Paris made a drunken mistake? Or is this a once a cheater, always a cheater situation? And Kevin Matthews adds, Paris is so calculated, I kind of figure it's option C. She knew she might be removed from the show via the truth booth, so she manufactured drama so she could go out of the house while making some memorable TV. So do you think it was a mistake and genuine, she's a cheater and she'll cheat again, or this was a stunt for TV?
I think she was too obliteratedly drunk to be able to, like, consciously plan this to hook up. Unless she did it pre-alcohol, that she's like, oh, I'm going to hook up with someone else to do that. But in the moment, there's no way she was, her mind was in the process of being able to think about that. So I'm more leaning towards the once a cheater, always a cheater thought process, that this is just what she always does. And based on her, like, apology, it's clear that this is what she always does.
I am going to go with drunken mistake. I do think I completely agree with you about it not being for TV, although fair question with the show.
It's always fair to ask.
It's always a possibility. Yeah. But I just think that what she was saying was just, it was right there as though it was rehearsed. But I do think that there are girls and times where all girls are having something so good and they just purposely self-sabotage. And then they try to get it back. And then it's like, oh, well, it got ruined because I self-sabotaged, not because you didn't like me or didn't work out or I wasn't a good girlfriend or whatever. So I just do think that things were going so well and she didn't have any drama and she self-sabotaged. And she's really, really lucky that she didn't permanently screw it up. But I think after all this happened and the truth boot confirmation, like, Paris completely transformed. Like, she's skipping out at the matchup ceremony. She's, like, so much more lighthearted. Like, I just think there was a total change in her after she got confirmed and Paris Pratt forgave her, that we're seeing a whole new side to Paris. So I kind of think that this was a drunken mistake that was really lucky for her that she recovered from.
Yeah, I could be. You know, I mean, might have to wait and see. So then we get to the date, which I think was also one of the best dates of the season, because that was just, like, a lot of fun. Like, Iron Man stuff.
Yeah, they're pulling out all the stops.
Man, the zip line, all this, the water skiing. This is, when you win a date, it's actually kind of, seems like it's, like, a lot of fun. So, at least MTV's not holding back there.
So this is where, I mean, basically all we really see on the date, or all I paid attention to, maybe you saw more, is that Paris and Pratt make up. A semi-makeup, where Pratt's kind of like, it's not going to be the same. And she's like, don't tell me that. And then he says the most confusing thing, that he only has till tonight to figure it out. Please tell me how he only has until that night to figure it out when, A, if they get in the truth booth and they're a match, then he literally has his entire life to figure it out. And if he gets in the truth booth and he's not a match, then he literally never has to think about it again.
I have no idea. That's my answer. It makes no sense.
I think these guys think that they have some free will here to, like, change their match. Like, she's your match or she's not your match. And if you forgive her or don't, that's not changing.
Yeah. No, it's already been determined who your match is. Like, whether you like them or not, it's not really up to you at this point.
So do we have anything that takes us to the matchup ceremony? Or do I just get right into it? I mean, not the matchup ceremony. I'm sorry.
Not really. All I had from the date also was just Pratt and Paris working out. So, yeah, so we can get to Truth Booth.
So, yeah, I mean, they get confirmed a perfect match. And what is so annoying to me is Paris starts being like, open your hearts, people. Open your hearts. See, open your hearts. Like, just because you're lucky and Brandon and Christina weren't, like, it could have easily have gone the other way, you know, and Christina and Brandon could have been a match, whatever.
Yeah. No, opening your hearts is definitely not the right strategy.
But it's not even that. It's just, A, everyone has been opening their hearts. No one's been using strategy that we've seen. And B, who are you to give advice? Just because you got lucky and were attracted to your match first right off the bat, that's luck. You don't need to get on your soapbox and preach to everyone else. Like, go to the honeymoon suite. Go home.
Paris was the one who's the daughter of a football player, right?
Yes.
I think that was just, like, her old football roots coming out. Like, all of a sudden, she made, like, a big play, and now she's trying to get everyone else fired up for the next one. But, like, open your hearts. Like, what does that even mean? Like, everyone opened their hearts, and they were all squashed in this episode. So, clearly, opening hearts was not the best move.
Well, Christina and Brandon opened their hearts yet again.
That's after, not all right after this.
Yeah. Bazinga. Yeah. I don't know. Catchphrase. But they hit the boom boom room, and this time, like, confirmed. I think you got award points in your pants.
I fully awarded points. We had double coitus points given out this week.
And this is what pissed me off, is just, like, John's being moosty about it. Christina, ballsily enough.
Is being moosty now a thing?
It's so moosty.
John is being moosty?
He moosties it up. Christina is ballsy as hell and goes right up to him right after with Brandon in the room. He's like, please don't hate me. And he's starting fairly enough to get tired of her, please don't hate me. But he literally just made out with Paris, who also had sex with someone probably 5 minutes before. So you don't have a leg to stand on, John. I'm sorry.
I think he has more of a leg to stand on. Come on. Like, she just literally just had sex with this guy probably like 30 seconds ago. They went down to get something to eat. And he's just like right there. I'm like, oh, I still like you, though. Let's talk to me. Don't make me feel bad. Like, I mean, come on. That was a rough spot.
He has nine other girls. He has nine other girls in the house to get to know, and he's choosing to be on this string. And she's being real. She's not sneaking around with Brandon. I mean, it's literally in front of everyone.
I guess so.
He could get off this train, and we'll talk about it at the end of the episode.
Well, he'll be off the train now.
We'll see. let's see. I think I have a question from. Nope, I already asked it. Sorry.
Okay.
Really good production here.
And then I think we get to Anthony and Jenny in the pool, right? Was that the next? We kind of touched upon that in the beginning.
Yeah.
Then we had the Leighton and Jenny scene again that we kind of touched upon. And then Bree and Curtis that just I kind of touched upon also about people's wanting to find themselves. So do you have anything else before we get to the matchup ceremony?
No, let's do it.
All right. So this is a big one. Let me just read through the matches, then we'll discuss through the major implications. So we start off with Ellie choosing Brandon, Jenny choosing Anthony, Bree choosing Curtis, Tyler choosing Alex, Shelby choosing Dario, Alex choosing Nate, Ashley choosing John, Jasmine choosing Garland, Jess choosing Leighton, and then Christina taking John and John agreeing to go with Christina leaving Ashley out of this week's ceremony, winning the Tyler Abron Award. Yes, she actually had that name after
her. The Guise Award.
The Guise Award.
One of my first questions that this raises, Brianna and Curtis. Brianna is saying that they have such a good relationship because they don't just talk about... Did she say Puerto Rican flowers?
She did say Puerto Rican flowers.
And video games.
Now, I think talking about video games is actually very important to a relationship. Like, if you don't like Mario Kart, you are probably a psychopath and I would not want to be with you. Well, so I need to find that out early.
I think now we have the answer potentially to why we're not seeing any of the other couples is because they're all talking about Puerto Rican flowers and video games.
Although I would love to see how long a conversation about Puerto Rican flowers could possibly last. Like, what can you possibly ask about?
Well, I mean, they're in Puerto Rico, so they may just be like, look how pretty that flower is.
But that's my point. How long can a conversation go on for? I guarantee they don't know anything about those flowers.
Well, you can't guarantee that. Maybe Garland could surprise you.
I'm fairly certain they're not well-versed in the Puerto Rican flower industry.
One thing I want to say is, and I mean, I'm waiting for us to have a bad thing to say about Ellie that doesn't have to do with the preseason for me, is Ellie says to the camera, like, she'd much rather pick Anthony. I mean, she has her pick of every single guy and picks Brandon, which is a completely innocuous choice because he's not going to piss anyone off. And she says, I'd want to pick Anthony, but he's still... is into Jenny, so she's going to wait until her turn. And I just kind of think that that's brilliant. That's what all the guys need to be doing and not picking out and breaking up couples that want to be together, but potentially waiting to see that they're not a match. If you're confident that they're your match, then they'll be there for you and just don't start drama.
Yeah. And I think you said last week that Christina's playing a perfect game. Well, maybe she's not playing a perfect game, but Ellie is being depicted as perfect because nothing she has done has been like, oh, Ellie, what are you doing? Everything's just been fantastic. It's just one after another. Every quote, every like thought process. Shout out to Ellie.
No harm on Ellie. We just haven't seen her getting enough interaction with the guys. And
that's
I think
the one starting downside. But I think that's going to start with Anthony. I think it was kind of like the breadcrumbs were there. And now I think it'll start leaning back that way.
Okay. We need to talk about Jenny.
So once Jenny got up to the podium before being asked who her perfect match was, Ryan asked the very difficult question of asking Jenny how are things. And that just sent her into like just a tailspin because she didn't know how to answer that. She was frozen by how are things. The simple question, I just didn't know how to answer. No one answer.
First of all, then Ellie speaks for her in the confessional and is like, I'm not going to do it, but basically saying that she sees you. And no, but that's what I've been saying this whole time. I've been weaving this thread about Jenny, that she's shady and she does these jealous girl stuff and she's sneaky and Ellie sees it. So I know it's right. And I'll trust Ellie on that more than I even trust myself.
Ellie needs to form her own religion. We'd be followers.
I do have to say that I got myself into a little bit of trouble this week. And it has to do with this. So at this moment, I tweeted something like, who cast Jenny? Hashtag waste. Like, womp womp, sorry. No, because it's just like, for any Survivor fans out there, like, Penner needs to tell her to tell her story. Like, you're up there, you have 2 seconds, if the focus is on you once every 2 weeks, and he says, how are things? And you literally short circuit. She's like, I don't like this. I pick with my heart, Anthony. Like, it was so confusing. I had to rewind it. I didn't understand why she couldn't just say things are okay. And so, yeah, it was a waste. If you literally can't speak in front of the camera, what are you doing there? You're there to tell a story. So, okay. I tweeted this. I don't tag people in them usually unless it's Ellie and I'm just pandering and telling her that she's great.
Because, like, once again, she's got the best Twitter handle of all them all, right?
So, yeah, well, okay. No, so I get some support from this Christy Link who says something with a bad word, so I'm not going to read it, but, you know, whatever, a little support. And then Are You the One Casting, classic, our friends at Are You the One Casting, tweet, we did, and you talking about her, so clearly it was not a mistake, hashtag Team Jenny. Now, do I get a hashtag? I didn't know that this was escalating to that, but...
Wow, we gotta get Team Allie trending.
So I said, does talking about someone for not talking really count? And I was trying to lighten the mood, like, a little haha. You know I'm not one to get into Twitter wars. That's you. That's you.
I love getting the Twitter wars.
Yeah, I don't like to upset the people. I'm just saying, speak in front of the camera. Is that too much to ask?
Screw the people.
So Jenny then gets involved and says, I'm not as outspoken or as type A as the rest. Adds diversity, but keep hating. Thumbs up. This just took a whole nother level. Because first of all, I'm not asking you to be type A or outspoken. There are plenty of characters like Amber or Ethan. I'm trying to think of other people from last season who were not Simone's, who were not Ellie's. I like, Shelby, when the camera's on her, says how she's feeling. We know about it. Mm-hmm. We have no idea where Jenny's at. Like, it's so confusing. That's why watching her and Anthony is annoying, because I don't understand any emotional connection between them. And she's not helping us by talking when she's in front of the camera. So you don't have to be type A. You just have to speak. But keep hating.
Haters gonna hate.
And then Lauren Ashley gets involved and at Laura Ashall 93, worst Twitter handle maybe, says bad press is better than no press, hashtag Team Jenny. And to this I say, Brian, we have arrived.
We are because now we're press. We're press. That's the best move in Rob is a podcast for Brian and Allie history.
Yeah,
we
so
are the press.
I tried to smooth things over and I said, since when am I press? Haha, no hate, Jenny Nat Miller, it's all in fun. Which it totally is. I don't hate anyone on the show, despite how much I say I do. But we are the press, so, you know, a hearty mazel tov to you and I.
Next stop is we're showing up to the reunion with press badges on and getting one-on-one interviews with a little white notepads.
Yeah, someone hook us up. We're press. Bad press is good press. Or what is it? Bad press? What did she say?
No, bad press is better than no press.
So give us bad press badges if they still work.
Hey, that could be our name of our podcast, Bad Press.
Bad Press.
Which, by the way, is probably going to be the hashtag.
Yeah, so you're welcome. I'm taking to Twitter to serve you, listeners of Rehab Up, of this Rehab Up. So you're welcome. That's it.
That's it. I don't know where to go from there.
I already tweeted advertising for this podcast that was yet to be recorded, that this is the latest edition of me blowing minor Twitter beef out of proportion.
I need to step on my Twitter hate game. I need to start getting into fights with people.
I didn't tag anyone in this. I just said Jenny, J-E-N-N-I. That's it. No ats.
You know what's actually really funny going back to Twitter? Tyler has literally followed and unfollowed me about 10 times. And it's very weird. I don't know. maybe she's
Tyler, if you're out there, please, Tyler sent me a direct message today that said, like, how are you? And I think that it's a virus because she had sent me a virus previously. And so if you're out there, follow Brian or don't follow Brian and send me another direct message if that was your intention or clean up your Twitter of viruses.
Or don't.
Or don't. All right, let's get back on track. I'm sorry.
Let's get back to the biggest moment of the season, which is the fact that none of these pairs are matches.
Oh, wait, I forgot about that. No, yeah. You mean the biggest part wasn't my Twitter beef?
The biggest part was finding about why Pratt always holds a pitcher. The second biggest part was your Twitter beef. The third biggest is no matches. First time in Oregon 1 history, there are no matches.
Well, there's the one match, but
when you pick your person, there's no matches.
We have a ton of questions we're going to get to about this, but first reactions.
This is the turning point of the season, and now I am fully confident that they will get money. Because this was the greatest thing to happen to them. This was literally 9 truth boots in one shot. And they got an answer to it. Like, so many, like, love triangles and pairs they felt were locked. Like, it just opens the door to so much stuff now that I think this will be the moment you look back on and be like, all right, this is why they got the money.
Or as Brandon would so elegantly state, now we'll find out who the hypocrite is and who the hypocrite isn't.
Yes, because a lot of big pairs are now going to be split up. I mean, think about it. Jenny and Anthony, gone. Bree and Curtis, gone. Shelby and Dario, gone. Leighton and Jess, gone. Even, like, the new ones, like Jasmine and Garland, gone. John and Christina, gone.
Right.
Like, all those people now move on, or theoretically should move on.
All right, so let's get to the question. So Alex Panda Mirren asks, after the episode, we've pretty much had a handful of relationships ripped apart. Which of the couples do you think will actually start to distance themselves to find their perfect match, and which will cling to each other?
I think Anthony and Jess, Anthony and Jenny, I mean, will cling a little bit for a little while. For the next episode, they'll cling. And I think Jess will still try to cling to Leighton for an episode or two. I actually think Bree and Curtis will do a pretty good job of separating pretty well, because they just seem like they each have a decent head on their shoulders and they're really here for the game. Just when you hear, like, their confessionals, and I actually went back and watched some of those deleted scenes, and it seems like each of them have, like, a really good sense of how to play the game. Now, it's easy to say that when you think you have your perfect match, so we'll see what happens now. But I think, oddly enough, the two of that might be the closest, might actually do the best of trying to find who in and out with.
See, I think what you're saying is really interesting and could be valid, but I kind of think Anthony and Jenny will fall apart. I think it's going to be based on who feels the strongest, because I just don't. Well, I guess we'll see if Anthony's been legit, but I definitely think he'll move on pretty quickly. I think Leighton will move on to Jenny pretty quickly. Jess will be destroyed. I think Brianna, did you watch this week's deleted scene with the speed dating?
Yeah, the speed dating, yeah, I watched that.
So basically, just to give anyone who's not watching the deleted scenes, like, a heads up, there's a scene that Brianna is, like, suggests that everyone speed date with Curtis so that the girls, encouraging Curtis to get to know the girls, because she's always thinking about it's a game. She's always thinking about getting to know other people. And she's literally going from guy to guy interrogating them for herself to know who's her match if it's not Curtis. And I don't think that this really demonstrates a realistic thought that Curtis could not be her match. I think she's trying to prevent being one of the people from season one, to prevent being a Shanley. But is she really getting to know these guys by viciously interrogating them? And I think it's, like, thinly veiled. Like, if these girls were getting to know Curtis to actually be their match, she might have a more of a problem with it than we're together, we're probably a match, but get to know each other just in case.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I mean, they're in love with each other. Like, I think that's going to be a challenge for them. I think Shelby and Dario are going to be pretty easily split apart.
I think that'll be a clean break. And Jasmine and Garland will be a clean break.
I don't think Christina and John really have anything to get over.
Yeah, that'll be... I mean, Christina's had one foot out the door and into Brandon's bed pretty much all the time anyway, so...
We skipped over Musti gives her an ultimatum. I mean, I respected him for this. When he picks her back, he says, like, this is your last chance. But little did he know, it was already her last chance.
It was another callback to season one with Wes giving the...
Are you going to rock with me? Are you going to rock with him?
Which was probably the best moment of season one. So, this was not as good, but
it was nowhere near. I mean, I thought of it, but I wouldn't have even put it in the same sentence.
No, nah. The only thing to compare was this, was just a straight ultimatum. But other than that, not nearly as good. So we actually had another question from Christina. I'm assuming the K silent, Christina Narr. Basically, she asks, where do they go from here? And is it possible for the viewers to really piece anything together since we essentially haven't seen anyone in those pairings with anyone else?
I think this is impossible for the viewers to piece together right now. I am rethinking even the way that they've even set up the first four episodes. Like, I now realize that these were all building just to this no match moment, so that you would know enough of the matches and how upsetting this was, and that this was the pivotal moment. And now I kind of think, as it falls apart, we'll start getting back to Jenny and Lee in possibly being a match. Jess and Anthony, maybe Ellie and Anthony, as we've seen them being hinted at. Alex and Nate were hinted at a little bit. Like, I think now we're gonna have to pick up the hints that were dropped on the way.
Because, you know, this brings up again, like, I think we mentioned this a couple of times, that this is just such a unique reality show in that, you know, with Survivor, or I guess with Big Brother, you know, they know how the show ends. So they can then make the winners or the people who last a while seem like they've been doing stuff along the way, and they can just kind of plot the show to make it look one way. But, you know, if Anthony and, Alexandria are a match, if they're not in any way talking to each other in the first few, 3 or 4 weeks, you can't edit it to make it seem like they're a match. Like, if Anthony is only dealing with Jenny, that's what you have to show. And if they're not a match, you can't then steer it that way. So it's just, the show is just so unique in that fashion that the editing is just so difficult to portray what the end result is going to be without just staying in the moment.
Well, also potentially, I mean, the 10 main people that we've seen could all be matched up with the 10 main people we haven't, but those 10 formed 5 couples, long couples. So, I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see where everyone goes from here. And I know people, this is something to point out. Someone, Christina Narr, also made an Excel spreadsheet, and I've seen a couple other grids being posted on Twitter. If you want to see Kristen's, I'm sorry, did I say Christina? If you want to see Kristen's, you can go to the Rob Has a Podcast Facebook page and check it out on this episode's questions thread. And so some people are still trying to map it out and make sense of it, but I kind of just think we have to see the next episode. Like, we really need another episode to see where this is going to go.
You know, I studied with that Kristen spreadsheet a little bit, and I tried to think about possible combinations that could work. And right now, my leading contender is, I think, Ashley.
Hold on.
Okay.
If you're going to say your leading contender based on, like, stats, I don't know that I want to hear it. Because for me, so I understand the excitement of people using the math and the logic and making the matches based on probability. But for me, that's like just like MTV showing a spoiler.
No, it's not even like statistic. It's just based on, you know, who was matched in the first week when they had 2 matches and who was matched when they had 3 matches. And now that we know that so many of these people aren't, like, who's left.
Right. So, I mean, all right. Go. I mean, you can go ahead. I'm going
to be wrong about all this. And I'm basing one of them off just because I want to be right from my preseason prediction where I stuck Ashley and Dario together. And I think that they're maybe a match. And this one, I think, more so than even just a match, just from what they've kind of dropped in the first few episodes, I think Alex and Christina are a match. They just had like a kind of dynamic, and the way they talk about what they want, I think they're a match. So that's one of the other main couples that I'm leaning towards. Alex and Christina, Ashley and Dario. And there was one more that I liked. Maybe Anthony and Jess too. So those were like the 3 biggest ones on my radar.
No, I definitely thought that Christina and Alex could be a match, and I'll, you know, support you on that. And I'm totally in the minority of the people who don't want to use the spreadsheet to figure it out. But, like, eventually you may, with the chart, like, be doing a better job than the people in the house are doing and be able to, I know someone posted in the comments of the show, this website that does literally the statistics and the probabilities of people being matches. And I totally get people wanting to be interested in that, but that's just not, I kind of want to watch as much unfold as I can.
No, I can understand that. And just even going off that, Andrew Kirk asks, do you think this is actually a good thing for the show? From a viewer's standpoint, it's making it a lot tougher for us to predict matches. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, technically, it's making it easier to predict matches because it's just ruled out a bunch of people. But I do agree with him in the way that I like to predict matches, which is probably what he means, is by watching them and being like, oh, I see them actually as a couple. Their body language is weird. I'm not into them as a couple. Like those kinds of things. I do agree that it just ripped away a lot of our, at least like two or three of these five we thought could potentially be a match. I mean, who thought Brianna and Curtis were in a match based on what we had seen?
I mean, we were almost more certain that they were a match than Pratt and Paris. I mean, we thought that those two weren't a match. So that was definitely shocking.
Yeah. So, I mean, do I think it's good for the show? I'm not sure. I mean, they just kind of like chewed us up, got us invested in this and spit us out. And I'm excited to see what happens. I don't know that it's necessarily great. I'm sure when they hit the editing room, maybe it wasn't great for like a story arc of a couple, because they didn't have one besides Pratt and Paris that went through more than like in that didn't, that covered these episodes. But I think from a strategic perspective, from them getting the money, and from a drama of just this episode perspective and the beginning of next, I think it was great. Yeah, what do you think?
I think it is good, because it almost allows them to tell kind of like two different stories within one season. Like you have like the pre like zero match ceremony, and then you're gonna have the post zero match ceremony, where you're gonna have probably a lot of people actually finding out who their match is, because now all of a sudden you're picking between five people instead of 10 people. So I think it actually is a nice little change up for the show, rather than just being so like, oh, this person clicked early, and so then this person clicked early. Now you're gonna have a whole new jumble of people, a new pairing that it's gonna be fun, rather than seeing the same people paired together all the time.
On another note, I have a question for you from Twitter that I think you'll like. AF4 at NYYRMDT writes, when Jess says in the matchups that she and Leighton are making a deeper connection, is that intentional or unintentional comedy?
I think I tweeted about that last night. That was the out of context quote of the night. She thinks she was asked like, oh, is it just straight attraction, or do you guys actually have a good conversation? She's like, oh, no, me and Leighton, we get deep. Oh boy. PG podcast.
And then the last question I have, I don't know if you have more, Plainview Sue asks, how shocked are you guys that there was absolutely no matches at the matchup? So were you like totally stunned? Did you think they were going on a poor trajectory?
I was genuinely stunned that none of those pairings were a match. I mean, especially for me, Bree and Curtis were the biggest ones that I was shocked. And I figured that, you know, Shelby, Dario, some of these others that they spent some time on that would be a match. But like we've said, just because they're spending time on it doesn't necessarily mean that they're a match. It just means that that's who they're spending a majority of their time with.
Which brings us to the aftermath.
You know, this is actually probably the best of the four after matches. I was actually into that one a little bit.
I mean, it gave more like usually I only have two lines of notes of things that happened. I think I have like five lines of notes of relevant things that happened. So yeah, okay, by that measure, it was definitely the best one.
For me, the first takeaway was Ryan confirming what you said in the first episode about Ellie, that she showed up there like really dressed up and then immediately stripped out of those clothes and was immediately in like her tie-dye shirt. And he pointed that out too, so.
I'm actually, maybe I'll tweet this. I'm in my Halloween podcast attire, and I'm wearing a messy bun and a tie-dye shirt, and this is my Ellie costume. No one can see me, but believe it.
I'm still in my athletic shorts.
So Brian is his former self for Halloween.
Exactly.
But yeah, no, I mean, I got from this, John's an instigator, because I love how now they're taking questions from the cast, which I do think is interesting, but it's like, did they not get enough questions from the viewers?
Good questions probably is the better question.
Moosty videos in and is like, who's a better kisser, me or Pratt? Which I know there was no drama, there's no bad blood there, but instigator.
What else did you have?
Oh, I have that Paris and Pratt, either Paris is trying to give us the impression that her and Pratt are still together, because she's now calling him Tyler and keeps reiterating that they're still crazy about each other. And she takes back the Tic Tac comment, and she takes back that she formerly implied that he has a small penis. I was gonna say like man part, but I'm an adult.
You went all the way.
Yeah.
I don't think they're still together.
From knowledge or from...
Not from knowledge at all. Just based on Instagram and Twitter habits, I don't think they're together.
Well, I don't know that they'd be allowed to be posting Instagram pictures.
No.
Like, I don't think Ethan and Amber posted Instagram pictures before the reunion, did they? Maybe they did.
I don't remember following them. I don't remember, obviously.
I didn't either. I'm just making that up. One, so. Was it convincing though?
Yeah, maybe
they're just good friends, but that's why I think maybe Paris are just trying to give the impression of that, because she just kept saying, like, we're still crazy about each other. It's just like, okay, we get it. You like each other, whatever. Ryan doesn't know the matchups before they're revealed. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, and that's good. I'm happy that he doesn't know. That when he's asking questions, he's not leading them to one way or another.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I just think that the rest of the matchup, the aftermatch, just showed why Ryan doesn't talk for extended periods of time on the episode.
I thought Ryan actually came across decently in the aftermatch. I was a little impressed with him.
He acts like somebody who has a much more impressive IMDb profile than he actually has. Like,
has he
was
done
watching
anything besides this?
Yeah, he's been in a couple of movies and TV shows, and he actually produces some stuff. I think he's somehow involved in Idiot Test on Game Show Network. Blah, blah, blah. He acts like he's like George Clooney, who decided to do an MTV hosting gig. And it just always bothers me. But yeah, that's just my Ryan beef.
That's all right. I was fine with him. His Scally was pretty funny. So.
Yeah, his Scally was good. I'll give him credit where credit's due. His Scally was great. But I didn't realize they were in costume at first. And I just saw that. And I was like, oh my God, who styled him?
You know what's actually funny? I recognized Ryan dressing as Scally more than I recognized Scally actually being there as being Scally himself.
With the hair. No, that was great. Fair. The last thing I have, I don't know if you have anything else, is just like a little minor Twitter beef between Moosty and Brandon.
So is John being Moosty?
Yeah, he's being so Moosty. I can't wait till he finds his match, and then maybe he'll be less Moosty. But Brandon at Tyndall10 writes, Paris has dem beer goggles going on with at MTV John Moostis right now. Damn. Hashtag loopy. Hashtag drunk. And Moosty writes back at MTV John Moostis. At Tyndall10, maybe true, but at MTV Christina didn't. Hashtag are you the one? And then Jasmine, with her amazing Twitter picture shoving her sandwich in her face, writes, damn. So
I love when you read tweets and you read the handle of the person and not just Christina or Brandon.
Sorry,
please keep doing that.
Is that not what people do? I feel like people do that.
I mean, I'm not really around. I don't really read tweets out loud much too often. But I love the fact that you say at Tyndall10 or whatever. Just keep doing it.
I'm making it up as I go. It's all on the fly here. No, but I just think it's fine. I think there's, for the most part, there's love and unity within this cast. But I like finding the little tweets, joking or not, that are little daggers.
Yeah, it seems that maybe just a couple people are on the outside, but everyone else seems to be a cohesive group. And I don't like that. I want to start more drama.
Well, hopefully Ellie and I can band together against Jenny's sneakiness.
Ellie,
and make it really serious.
The second coming.
The second coming. Yes. All right, so that's all I got. You got anything else?
No, I think that's all I got. Any more thoughts on who maybe, where really the story is going to go from here? Like what matches you think might develop?
I don't even know where our podcast is going to go from here. I hope this is like a mountain to tackle this episode. Where's the story going to go? Hopefully more Ellie. I think this is actually something I thought of before I skipped it in talking about it because we got confirmed that Anthony and Jenny aren't a match. But I just still think that Layton and Jenny are a match because even the storytelling of Jess and Layton and Jenny and Anthony both made both of those relationships have holes in it and have problems in it. And we always kind of are led to believe, I think, that they're going to come back together. So that's my prediction.
I'm leaning towards Anthony and Jess coming back together.
Great. I hope that works for me. That would be such a funny foursome situation.
It actually would be pretty funny. They split apart, they come back together. Only on Are You the One?
Yes. So looking forward to that.
All right. So for next week, we'll be right back again. And if you want to have your questions read on the show, you can post them on the Facebook thread at Rob Has a Podcast on the Facebook page, or you can tweet us for me at Bus Drivers Route.
And for me at Lash Tweets. I just want to clarify, there was some understandable confusion. there isn't a specific Facebook page for our wrap up. It's for Rob Has a Podcast. Yes. And then Brian, every week, it posts a picture from the episode and says to tweet your question. So you can look, it's usually noon on Tuesdays around that time.
Around,
you know, between noon and whenever I can get on the podcast, I kept Brian waiting this time. I'm sorry. So just shoot us your questions there or on Twitter and follow us.
Yes. We already did that.
No, I meant subscribe.
subscribe. It's robhaswebsite.com/challengeiTunes. And also on the post, you can leave comments there. We'll pull questions from that too. So I think that'll do it. Oh, the hashtag, if you made it this far, hashtag bad press. Hashtag bad press. Which literally, I'm not kidding, may or may not become the name of this podcast.
I just don't know. Are we bad press or are we no press?
Should the name be Bad Press, No Press?
No, I think it should be Bad Press, but or either Bad Press or No Press. You tell us what
I think. No Press might be better. But let us know if you think our name should be Bad Press or No Press. So whatever, use any of those hashtags. Not that we get many of those in the first place anyway, but hashtag Bad Press, No Press, whatever you want to do. Or just tweet us to say you finished the podcast. You can just, that's it. But that'll do it for this week. We'll be back next week, where hopefully we'll have a little more clarity on some of these matches. So until then, have a good one.